This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen, coming to Tuesday, February 14th, 2006. The Long War, The Apotheosis of Capitalism, Part 2. December 11th, 2005, The Sunday Times in London. With a banner headline, Israel Readies Forces for Strike on Nuclear Iran. A report by Uzi Manemi in Tel Aviv and Sarah Baxter in Washington. Israel's armed forces have been ordered by Ariel Sharon, the prime minister, to be ready by the end of March, that's March 2006, for possible strikes on secret uranium enrichment sites in Iran, military sources have revealed. The order came after Israeli intelligence warned the government that Iran was operating enrichment facilities believed to be small and concealed in civilian locations. Fast forward. February 12, 2006, The Daily Telegraph in Great Britain. U.S. prepares military blitz against Iran's nuclear sites. Strategists at the Pentagon are drawing up plans for devastating bombing raids backed by submarine-launched ballistic missile attacks against Iran's nuclear sites as a last resort to block Tehran's efforts to develop an atomic bomb. Central Command and Strategic Command planners are identifying targets, assessing weapons loads, and working on logistics for an operation, the Sunday Telegraph has learned. They are reporting to the office of Donald Rumsfeld, the defense secretary, as America updates plans for action if the diplomatic offensive fails to thwart the Islamic Republic's nuclear bomb ambitions. Tehran claims that it is developing only a civilian energy program. This is more than just the standard military contingency assessment, said a senior Pentagon advisor. This has taken on much greater urgency in the recent months. Ralph.
In 1979, Oded Yinon of the Mossad prepared a document called A Strategy for the 1980s, in which he called for the dismantling ad seriatim of each Middle Eastern country in its turn into its ethnic and religious components. This defining document became the ideological blueprint for not merely the neocons, but for U.S. imperialism itself, and all of the preparations for the dismantling of Iraq and for the current program for dismantling Iran were laid well in advance and have been on an agenda. The ideological preparation and the pretext and the lies that pertain to Iraq with respect to weapons of mass destruction, the lies that pertain to Saddam Hussein with his putative plans for invading Kuwait into which he was entrapped by Bush Sr., all of this is being played out with deliberation of forethought with respect to Iran. Every aspect of the contrivance of a casus belli has been in long preparation for the past quarter of a century. Israel, Iran nukes by 2010 by Joshua Brilliant, UPI Israeli correspondent, February 10th. United States, European and Israeli intelligence chiefs agree. Iran will have a nuclear bomb by 2010 unless we disrupt its efforts. The recently retired director of military intelligence, Major General Aharon Ziev Farkash, stated. Farkash headed the military intelligence in the last 4 years, Israel's biggest intelligence branch. He is responsible for presenting the cabinet with the national assessment. They all agree that Iran needs 6 months to complete its research, and if uninterrupted, it will need but a year with 2,000 to 4,000 centrifuges to produce the fissible material. The most important step now is to stop them in their tracks, says the World Peace Herald and UPI Joshua Brilliant. Al Gore, Agence France-Presse, former vice president, defeated presidential hopeful Al Gore, lashed out at Iran's clerical regime, denouncing it as a threat to the world. He stated the corrupt leadership associated with President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad requires alarm bells all over the world. And indeed, Al Gore calls for a preemptive strike on Iran. And here, indeed, is the Daily Telegraph on the same date publishing the targets, the actual map of those targets that have already been prepared for the pending attack on Iran. Buhran, the mining uranium facility. Ardan, where they reportedly are milling ore. Gehenan Mines. Isfahan. Now, Isfahan is a major civilian and archaeological and historic center of Iran. Natanz, and indeed in Tehran. Bashir, Arak, and Arak. All of these are already targeted and they are mapped out. There are, in fact, 9 specific targets for major attack by cruise missiles and by a concentrated air attack.
Ralph, the Daily Telegraph on February 13th, 10,000 would die in an A plant attack on Iran by Thomas Harding. A major American attack on Iran's nuclear sites would kill up to 10,000 people and lead to a war in the Middle East. This is the conclusion of a report by the Oxford Research Group. Their report, Iran, Consequences of a War. The research coincides with reports that strategists at the Pentagon are drawing up plans for a last resort strike that I mentioned before. Let's look at what this strike would be. The attack would result in a protracted military confrontation involving Israel, Lebanon, and some Gulf states, says Paul Rogers. This would be the consequence of the bombing of Iran, according to the Oxford Research Group. And what they anticipate the strike to be, more than 100 American bombers based on carriers in the Gulf would take part in huge simultaneous surprise air attack on 20 key nuclear and military facilities. If the targets include the reactor at Bushehr, which will become fully fueled this year and which incidentally has been built by the Russians, a radioactive cloud could spread over the Gulf. Iran's small navy, which includes 3 submarines, would have to be attacked to negate threats to vital shipping lanes in the Straits of Hormuz. But, according to the Oxford Group, Iran could still retaliate with suicide speedboats, possibly leading to crippling rises in the price of oil. This is the anticipation of the Oxford Group. They also say that a ground offensive in Iran is not feasible because it would require at least 100,000 troops. Now, this is a very low estimate, and already the American forces are overextended by the soldiers in having soldiers in Iraq and Afghanistan. Well, but let's go back, Ralph,
yes,
before
please.
You go on. Let's go back to the statements of Ariel Sharon before he was in a coma. Israel, and not only Israel, cannot accept a nuclear Iran. Yes, we have the statements you mentioned of Al Gore and other statements we'll mention of heads of state from around the world. We have the ability to deal with this, and we're making all the necessary preparations to be ready for such a situation. The order to prepare for a possible attack went through the Israeli Defense Ministry to the Chief of Staff. Sources inside the Special Forces Command confirmed that, quote, G readiness, the highest stage for an operation, was announced in December of 2005. This is the beginning of December 2005. And if Israel would call upon its top Special Forces Brigade, Unit 262, that's the equivalent of the British SAS, and its F-151 Strategic 69 Squadron to strike Iran and return to Israel without refueling. If we opt for the military strike, said a source, it must be not less than 100% successful. It will resemble the destruction of the Egyptian Air Force in 3 hours in June 1967. Ralph?
Meyer, the preparation for the world for the long-standing plans to create a pretext for attacking Iran were made very clear by Seymour Hersh in The New Yorker in June of 2004, in an extended article entitled Plan B, based on American and Israeli sources, Hirsch reveals the extent of the operations. Quote, Israeli intelligence and military operatives are already at work in Kurdistan, training Kurdish commando units and running covert operation inside Iran and Syria. And the article is a very detailed examination of forces on the ground as of 2004, that's over 2 years ago, preparing for the attacks. And in a second article by Hirsch, which was published in January of 2005, The Coming Wars, the U.S. military is conducting secret operations inside Iran. Much of the focus is preparing the intelligence and targets for Iranian sites. They are identifying 36 targets, which will be destroyed by precision strikes and short-term commando raids. The civilians in the Pentagon will want to go in to Iran and destroy as much of their military infrastructure as possible. Just how advanced these U.S. and Israeli plans for an attack on Iran were spelled out by the London Sunday Times, and indeed it has been an open secret for which the press of the world has been agitating public opinion to get them on board for long-standing plans. It is exactly the scenario that was played out with respect to Iraq itself. CIA's Goss warned Ankara of Iranian attack 13th of February, that is yesterday's date, in Agence France-Presse, datelined Turkey, Cumhuriyet. In his recent visit to Ankara, CIA Director Portagaz brought 3 dossiers on Iran. He asked for Turkey's support for Washington's plans for attacking Iran. He stated that Ankara has to be ready for U.S. operations, air operations against Iran and Syria. And he came to Ankara immediately after FBI Director Robert Mueller's visit had presented Turkey with Iran's plans to develop nuclear weapons and the United States' preparations to stage and launch attacks. And the Scotsman, on the 28th of October, Blair delivered blunt action warning to Iran, in which Tony Blair stated explicitly, military action against the Islamic Republic is imminent. And this thesis has been orchestrated, as I say, in almost every paper throughout throughout Europe and indeed throughout the Middle East. Here is Martin Walker, United Press International, on the 2nd of January. United States prepares Iran strike. The Bush administration is preparing its NATO allies for a military strike against nuclear sites in Iran, according to German media reports reinforcing earlier reports in the Turkish media. The Berlin Daily Der Tagesspiegel quoted, quote, NATO intelligence sources that NATO's allies have been informed that the United States is preparing its military options in Iran. And the respected German Weekly Der Spiegel is cited here. What is new here is that Washington is dispatching high-level officials to prepare its allies for an attack, rather than merely implying the possibility, as it has done repeatedly during the past year. The German news agency, DDP, cited Western security sources to state that CIA Director Portagaz asked Turkey's Prime Minister, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, to provide political and logistical support for the airstrikes against Iran. Goss visited Ankara and met Prime Minister Erdogan on December 12th and asked for special coordination from Turkish intelligence to help prepare the operation. In fact, Goss delivered to the Turkish Prime Minister and his security aides a series of dossiers containing intelligence on the forthcoming attacks. In a December 23rd report, the DDP agency quoted a high-ranking German military official stating to their reporter, the Americans will take the opportunity to attack Iran before the country can develop nuclear weapons. And this thesis has been amplified, as I say, in virtually every bourgeois newspaper over a period of 2.5 years. The Jerusalem Post on the 31st of December, U.S. planning strike against Iran, the United States is coordinating with NATO a military attack against Iran. Maya?
Yes, Ralph. Originally, the Israelis said, if you don't do it, we're going to do it. And by December, the Israeli press was saying that the plans were there. Israel was readying for a strike on Iran, just as it had done against Iraq in 1981 with the Osirik nuclear facility before it could go online. And this is what the Israelis have said. You cannot allow civilian nuclear facilities in the Middle East. Israel itself does not acknowledge its own nuclear capabilities, at least 200 warheads and probably many more. Yet it is ready to attack Iraq, as it did, and now Iran. The orchestration is going on throughout the world. The Australian reproduced an article that had appeared in the Sunday Times, an article February 6th, recently, Iran threat like Hitler, Merkel, Adolf, the comparison between Adolf Hitler and the Iranian government is becoming commonplace. The idea of we must strike, otherwise there is the appeasement of World War II, and look what that will get us. The article reads, German Chancellor Angela Merkel compared President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad of Iran to Adolf Hitler as Tehran vowed to resume the enrichment of uranium, which could be used to make nuclear weapons. Now, this is the assumption that it could be used to make nuclear weapons. In fact, the enrichment of uranium is significant for the nuclear facilities, for the atomic energy facilities to produce electricity. Amid growing fears that the Iranians are intent on acquiring a, quote, Islamic bomb. Note, it's no longer a nuclear weapon. It is now the Islamic bomb. And this, again, is being projected in the press. Ms. Merkel warned that the world must not repeat the mistakes it made in appeasing the Nazis. Quote, looking back to German history in the early 1930s, when National Socialism was on the rise, there were many outside Germany who said, it's only rhetoric, don't get excited. Ms. Merkel told an international security conference in Munich, again quoting Ms. Merkel, there were times when people could have reacted differently, and in my view, Germany is obliged to do something at the early stages. We want to, we must prevent Iran from developing its nuclear program.
Merkel issued what was called a blunt warning to Mr. Ahmadinejad. Iran has blatantly crossed the red line, she said. Now, I want to take a quick moment, Maya, to review here the extent to which this has been orchestrated. Here, the Anatolia in Turkey. Why did he come here? By Mahia Kaynak. CIA Director Porter Goss arrived in Turkey with a large delegation. The CIA does not want the issue to be interpreted in any other way. It is very clear Turkey is being prepared for an operation to be carried out. And the article details what the mission of Porter Goss, as Robert Mueller indeed before him, had been on Turkey, in Turkey, to prepare for Turkish involvement in the assault on Iran and Syria. And here the London Times, Israel readies force for strike on nuclear Iran. This is the Sunday Times in London on December 11th. Israel's armed forces have been ordered by Ariel Sharon to be ready by the end of March for strikes on secret sites in Iran, military sources have revealed. The order came after Israeli intelligence warned the government that Iran was operating enrichment facilities, and the article details the Israeli military determination and decision. Italian Prime Minister, the world, this is on the by Associated Press on January 20th of this year, the world must confront Iran. The international community must have a defined, precise, and united strategy, Gianfranco Fini told the Associated Press. And indeed, the article cites Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert as stating Israel will not allow any country with hostile intentions to acquire weapons of mass destruction. We have the right and duty to stop it, preparing a strike. Here is the Daily Telegraph again on the 2nd of February. The Pentagon plans to derail Iranian atomic preparations. And indeed, the American and British intelligence has prepared for an attack on Iran. American hawks, such as Vice President Dick Cheney, are backing the track to prepare for a strike. Senior Pentagon advisor has stated that the crisis has deepened, and military strategists have been updating plans for military strikes on Iranian sites. The raids will be ordered. Indeed, London Times, hawks have war plans ready. It is the option of last resort, but it is now in preparation. And indeed, U.S. leaders are openly preparing public opinion. A recent poll showed that 57% of Americans favor military intervention in Iran, according to the London Times on the 7th of February.
Ralph, that is because over and again, U.S. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, President Bush, Vice President Cheney, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice have been calling Iran, accusing Iran of being, quote, the world's leading state sponsor of terrorism. Incidentally, Iran is not a subject of the Quadrennial Defense Review, nor is it of the Long War. The Long War, the war against terror, doesn't include this incredible strike, the use of nuclear weaponry even being discussed against Iran. Let's go back even further to August of 2005, August 1st, when Philip Giraldi, a former CIA officer who we've quoted before, a partner in Canestrero Associates, Vincent Canestrero was the head of counterterrorism at the CIA and now has a consulting firm. In an article for the American Conservative, Deep Background, Giraldi's column, he stated in August of last year, in Washington, it's hardly a secret that the same people in and around the administration who brought you Iraq are preparing to do the same for Iran. The Pentagon, acting under instructions from Vice President Dick Cheney's office, have tasked the United States Strategic Command, STRATCOM, which is responsible for the Gulf area, with drawing up a contingency plan to be employed in response to another 9/11-type terrorist attack on the United States. The plan includes a large-scale air assault on Iran, employing both conventional and tactical nuclear weapons. Within Iran, there are more than 450 major strategic targets, including numerous suspected nuclear weapons program development sites. Many of the targets are hardened or deep underground and could not be taken out by conventional weapons, hence the nuclear option. What's interesting about this Canestrero deep background is his reference to a 9/11-type terrorist attack on the United States. In other words, the planning within the Pentagon included a false flag operation, a staged operation in the United States, which provide a reason, for the American public to say, let's have a large-scale assault on Iran, similar to the work that went on that led to the bombardment of Afghanistan and later Iraq.
Well, Maya, the Philip Giraldi piece spells out what the long war is really about. It is hardly a secret that the same people in and around the administration who brought you Iraq are preparing to do the same for Iran. The Pentagon, acting under instructions from Vice President Dick Cheney's office, has tasked the Strategic Command with drawing up a plan to be employed. And in a large-scale air assault on Iran, employing both conventional and tactical nuclear weapons. Within Iran, there are more than 450 major strategic targets. The article by Philip Giraldi in the American Conservative spells out. U.S. prepares military blitz against Iran. Philip Sherwell, the Daily Telegraph from Washington, drawing up plans for devastating bombing raids backed by submarine-launched ballistic missile attacks. Central Command and Strategic Command planners are identifying targets and working on logistics for an operation, the Sunday Telegraph has learned, reporting to the office of Donald Rumsfeld, updating plans for action. And indeed, here we have the plans that are spelled out by the Sunday Times and attributed to Cheney. Israel plans strike on Iranian nuclear plant. It is a concentrated orchestration. And indeed, the bourgeois press has been preparing the public across the world in much the way that they had done with respect to the longstanding plans for the attacks on Iraq. Now, there's one dimension to this entire scenario, Maya, that I think we need to address here. There have been many who have been attempting to suggest that the real rationale for the plans to attack Iran have been the fact that the Iranians had set up an oil bourse or an oil stock market.
That they're proposing to set this up, the Iranian oil bourse.
Whereby the Iran would now use the euro as the currency for their oil transactions. A number of analysts, from Peter Dale Scott to John Pilger, who was mimicking basically, and frankly, he was virtually plagiarizing the writings of another man named Mike Whitney, have been orchestrating this particular theme. Webster Tarpley, others have been, Peter Dale Scott, have been putting forward the thesis that what's really animating the plans to attack Iran is the plans for an Iranian oil bourse that would hurt the dollar. And indeed, the same scenario entails the hypothesis that the reason for the attack or the war in Iraq was not oil as much as it was Saddam Hussein's intentions to switch over to the euro as the basic currency of exchange. I have little hesitation in saying that this is voodoo economics and has no real basis in fact. I want to say this because it's important to understand it is not any putative plans to use the euro as a currency. The euro didn't exist at the time that the preparations for the attacks on Iraq and Iran were laid out. All of the since 1964, every administration has made contingency and indeed strategic operational plans for seizing Middle Eastern oil. Here is Paul Gray.
Let's go back before you go to this. Nearly one out of three barrels of oil reserves in the world, are in either Saudi Arabia or Iraq. These are the proven reserves, and in Iraq there are largely unexplored reserves. And also Iran is an important supply of oil. And by 2015, according to a study by the CIA's National Intelligence Council, three-quarters of the Gulf's oil will go to Asia, chiefly China.
Well, Maya, I want to make this particular point here because, you see, one of the problems about attempting to suggest that it has to do with the euro, it almost provides a rationale for the actions of U.S. imperialism, and it belies the fact that it is capitalism itself which has depended upon not only arms production but on permanent war and on deepening exploitation. It doesn't need any casus belli of the immediate moment. It is a generic and strategic and overall condition of a deteriorating capitalist economy that it is addicted to permanent war. Here is Paul Craig Roberts on the very subject, and I think he says rather well what you and I have been articulating on Taking Aim for some time. Readers keep asking me if Bush is attacking Iran because it plans to open an oil bourse that would permit oil to trade into euros. A number of readers mistakenly believe that this would wreck the dollar's value. The answer is no. The neocon plan for the Middle East predates any notion of an Iranian oil bourse. Will an Iranian oil bourse hurt the dollar? Not really. The dollar's value depends on the world's willingness to hold dollar-denominated assets, not on the currency used to pay oil bills. Mm-hmm. If payments were not made in dollars, there would be a slight negative impact on the dollar from countries reducing their dollar cash balances. and from the shock of pricing oil in euros. But what really counts is what do the oil producers do with the currency they are paid. If they are paid in dollars, but they exchange the dollars for euros or yen and purchase equities or bonds or real estate in Europe and Japan, it doesn't matter a damn that the oil is billed in dollars. If they are paid in euros and they exchange the euros for dollars to purchase U.S. assets, it doesn't hurt at all that the oil is billed in euros. The negative impact on the dollar is far greater from the red ink necessary to finance the attacks on Iran than from any oil bores. U.S. war-making capacity is dependent on the rest of the world to finance it. Oil is billed in dollars because the dollar is the world's reserve currency. The dollar is not the reserve currency because oil is billed in dollars. And I would like to emphasize here that this attempt on the part of various liberal pundits, from Pilger to Peter Dale Scott, to ascribe to American imperialism some concern about an oil market or an oil bourse in Iran, or the euro didn't exist when the plans to invade Iran were being made. Before the euro, there was the German mark, the Swiss franc, the British pound sterling, the Japanese yen. These are all currencies of rival imperial powers, but it is the United States hegemony which defines their obligation to shield under the counter-revolutionary shield of American military capacity. As you have so often pointed out, Maya, the greatest holdings of U.S. treasuries are by whom? The Saudis, the Japanese, and the Chinese. They vast trillions of dollars are invested in U.S. Treasury notes by these states that have rival currencies. They aren't going to dump the dollar because if they attempt to dump it, they can't dump it all at once. And the first sign of dumping will devalue the rest of their holdings. They would be shooting themselves in their collective feet.
Ralph, the tens of billions of dollars, $30 billion, I believe, of long-term treasury notes, which was just released by the Fed, will be released in two offerings, were grabbed up. And they're grabbed up by pension funds looking for long-term investments, and for foreign governments, the long-term treasury notes are considered the safest financial instrument. And an article by Emily Rutledge appeared November 3, 2005, published by AlJazeera.net, Iran, a threat to the petrodollar. She asks that question and discusses Iran's decision to set up the oil and associate derivatives market in 2005, which would be in March of 2006, was when it would be opening. And she mentions that Iran is in close proximity to major oil importers such as China, Europe, and India. She goes into some of the history of the dollar as the standard, as what you call the fiat currency for the exchange of oil. In the 1970s, not long after the collapse of the gold standard, collapsed at the initiative of the United States, I will state here, the United States agreed with Saudi Arabia that OPEC oil should be traded in dollars, in effect replacing the gold standard with the oil standard. And you referred to Iraq, Ralph. In November 2000, Iraq began selling its oil in euros, in other words, the exchange of the euros instead of dollars. Its oil for food program, its account at the UN, was also transferred into euros and later converted. Mm. And Iraq later converted its $10 billion UN-held reserve fund into euros. This was done with the UN funds, mind you.
Without any objection from the United States, and for a very good reason. This is a false issue, brothers and sisters. It is not the conversion to euro or an oil bourse as if the Iranians were threatening the United States currency. The threat to the currency of the United States is the deficit financing of dependence on military output. The threat to the currency and the stability of the dollar is the fictive capital that leads to most economic activity being speculative on derivatives and on offshore accounts and on manipulation of stock markets and on the complete fictive economy instead of production for need and production for use in the United States. And indeed, it is the instability of the capitalist system. It is the deficit finance dollar that's value is worthless except for its being propped up by all of the dependent capitalist regimes of the world that places capitalism in this crisis that leads to the necessity for the martial law state and that fuels the attack, the class war, on all of our citizens. But to father this upon Iraq or Iran as a basis for invasion is to provide a liberal and confusionist cover for U.S. imperialism itself.
And, Ralph, we can add Venezuela in there, too. Iran has 126 billion barrels of proven oil reserves. That's 10% of the world's total. It also has the world's second largest proven natural gas reserves. And to control the world's resources, particularly as the Quadrennial Report notes China as the upcoming threat, and incidentally, in terms of China as a producer, recently the Wall Street Journal discussed how the production even of vitamin C has shifted from Japan and Europe, and China produces 85% of the world's vitamin C. So China is becoming the major producer, competitor with the United States, even as U.S. Corporate interests invest in China, developing its auto industry and other industries. China is the economic threat, and as such, the U.S. sees as a military threat, a hegemonic threat. Iran, then, which trades with China, particularly for oil and natural gas, then becomes a key issue for the United States in terms of this rule of empire. But from an economic perspective, notes Rutledge, including invoicing oil in euros is logical for Iran, as trade with the eurozone country accounts for 45% of its total trade. Remember, there is a U.S. embargo against trade with Iran. So Iran purchased most of its imports from the euro countries. More than a third of Iran's oil exports are destined for Europe, while oil exports to the United States are non-existent. So let's look at what this means. Eurozone countries alone account for almost a third of Iran's imports, and currently Iran must exchange dollars earned from its hydrocarbon exports into euros, which involves an exchange rate risk and transaction costs. So if Iran were to trade its oil in euro, it would build up its foreign reserves for use in making its import purchases.
Well, Maya, William Arkin in the February 10th issue of the Washington Post spells out what the real target here is. It's not just Iran. It's not just Syria. Is China the new threat, writes William Arkin. The Pentagon's new quadrennial defense review takes the first formal step in designating China as this country's number one enemy. Most coverage of the QDR is focused on the planned growth of special operations forces and their hardware decisions and the articulation of the long war. But buried in the hard-to-penetrate bureaucraties is a clear message. The United States will seek to ensure that no power will develop regional hegemony or disruptive capabilities, and China is the only nation with the capacity to do both. China, Russia, India, the entire Middle East, and most of Latin America, they are all targeted, and China in particular. More space is spent on China in the 113-page Quadrennial Defense Review of 2006 than any other single nation. It is very clear, brothers and sisters, the long war, the permanent war, targeting countries across the world, has in its sight the People's Republic of China, with its 1.3 billion population, with its growing economy, with its capacity to seek resources to sustain its own development. Anybody on the planet who seeks to develop their own resources or to benefit their own population becomes a target of a degenerating capitalist state.
Ralph, William Crystal hat of the neoconservatives, had noted long ago that China was the actual target. And he had put this forward in stating that he wanted the administration to focus on China even at the time after Iraq, and that the real true axis of evil, the Korea, Iran, and Iraq, that the China was the long-term interest for the United States. And here we have reflected in the Quadrennial Review the very notions put forward by the Project for the New American Century and William Crystal Foremost. To go back to control of resources, I want to read this quote and then go back to you because I found it quite enlightening. It appeared in an article by Robert Dreyfus in Mother Jones of March-April 2003 called The 30-Year Itch, about the developments of the Gulf War. And an even more perceptive and focused article for you to read is Ralph's Iraq and Kuwait, A History Suppressed, which really goes through the development of the attacks in the Gulf and the U.S. hegemony in that region. But in this article by Dreyfus, there's a very interesting quote from Rob Sobhani, an oil industry consultant, and he gave this quote. He said this at an American Enterprise Institute conference that took place in 2002. Quote, "One of the major problems with the Persian Gulf is that the means of production are in the hands of the state." I'm going to repeat that. "One of the major problems with the Persian Gulf is that the means of production are in the hands of the state." And he went on to discuss that dismantling government-owned oil companies would be one of the most important political changes that could take place in the region.
And Maya, the 30-year itch by Dreyfus has its merits, although, as you cite, it basically takes many of the citations from Iraq and Kuwait, A History Suppressed, without attribution, but I mean, what's new? But the real point about the important, I think it's an important article by Dreyfus nonetheless, but I have to say this. The problem with the article is that it attributes the origins of this to the 1970s. And it is a little bit absurd, of course. Capitalism has targeted the Middle East since the First World War, and in particular, every administration in the United States, including that of Jimmy Carter, but most importantly, going back to 1964, has had operational plans for seizing Arab oil. That, indeed, has been the predicate of imperial policy since the emergence of the national liberation and national independence movements, the anti-colonial movements of the Third World. And as you say, what were the aspirations of the Iraqi Revolution of 1958? To gain control of their own oil. What did Mossadegh do in Iran in 1962? He nationalized the oil. Abdul Karim Qasim confined the oil companies to 0.1% of the territory of Iraq. They target national ownership because national ownership means if there's any kind of democratic control of the economy by the working class, the social ownership of the means of production by the workers themselves. And what is Lenin's "What is to be done"? But a strategy for enfranchising the dispossessed of the world. That is why it is targeted by Donald Rumsfeld. That is why the martial law state is the predicate. And that is what the meaning of Dick Cheney's article is, as cited by James Taranto in the January 28th, 2006 Wall Street Journal, a strong executive.
It's a Wall Street Journal interview with Dick Cheney, an extensive interview.
And in that interview, Maya, it states that 2 months later, that is to say, 3 years after he ran for Wyoming's House seat, a decade after being in Congress, in January 1989, becoming the minority whip, the number two Republican, 2 months later, George H.W. Bush tapped him as defense secretary, and Cheney returned to the government with the help of another Bush. And the article in the interview in the Wall Street Journal is an articulation by Dick Cheney on the necessity for the imperial presidency, the necessity for the strong executive in which all power resides in the arbitrary determination of the President of the United States without legal restraint, without constitutional impediment, without congressional input, using the pretext of a nation at war, a war that has been contrived by the Cheneys and Rumsfelds themselves as the rationale for a dictatorship in the United States.
And Ralph, that is echoed in the Quadrennial Defense Review and the statements of Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld. In fact, what the Quadrennial Defense Review, the articulation of the Pentagon, states, quote, new and more flexible authorities from Congress are needed. New and more flexible authorities from Congress are needed. As William Arkin notes, old laws like old Europe need to be chucked overboard. And the Pentagon wants to give itself its own authorization.
And Maya, let me just spell out what are the full implications of these authorizations. Here is the New York Times on the 4th of February, 2006. The company of Dick Cheney, Halliburton. Halliburton subsidiary gets contract to add detention centers. The Army Corps of Engineers has been awarded a contract of up to $385 million for building detention centers. It has been awarded to Kellogg Brown and Root, the Halliburton subsidiary, charged with overcharging the Pentagon for its work in Iraq. KBR will build centers for the Homeland Security Department. Nominally, this is for immigrants in the United States. Nominally, this is to cope with national disaster in the United States. But what we're talking about is the same kinds of detention centers that were prepared by FEMA under Oliver North.
Controversial Rex 84, the readiness exercises.
In 1984, Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, prepared to round up and detain 400,000, quote, refugees for controlled population movements.
Uncontrolled
population movements, excuse me. And indeed, this was the same preparation for a roundup of Middle Eastern and Muslims that was described by Daniel Ellsberg as what was intended after 9/11.
What actually took place after 9/11, as people in New York will remember, the roundup of Pakistanis particularly.
These plans for detention centers have a long history. We've described them many times in Taking Aim. And indeed, the Miami Herald on July 5, 1987, referred to an executive order for continuity of government drafted in 1982 by the FEMA head Louis Giafrida, calling for, quote, suspension of the Constitution and declaration of martial law. The martial law portions of the plan were outlined in the memo by Giafrida's deputy, John Brinkerhoff. And indeed, there are two books, James Mann's Rise of the Vulcans and James Bamford's A Pretext for War, that reveal that in the 1980s, this parallel structure to operate outside normal government channels included the head of G.D. Searle and Company, Donald Rumsfeld, and a then-congressman from Wyoming, Dick Cheney. John Brinkerhoff commented on PBS, the United States, for the first time since the War of 1812, has to prepare for a command structure in the United States that we would apply in other theaters of war. NORTHCOM commander, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld announced, will be responsible for homeland defense and will serve as the head of the North American Aerospace Defense Command. NORAD will command U.S. forces that operate within the United States and will provide support, quote-unquote, for civilian authorities. In short, the responsibility is being transferred to the military under Northern Command. And indeed, this description in the New York Times is amplified in an article in Market Wire, in which it is spelled out that in the plan...
Business Wire, excuse me, Maya.
It is spelled out that the assignment to Cheney's Halliburton subsidiary of Kellogg Brown and Root to set up detention camps. It's an article here by Catherine Hunt. It's called Market Watch, and it states that the KBR has been handed a contract for $385 million to prepare for detention and removal operations facilities in the United States. The New York Times spells this out. It's linked to the plans of Oliver North. This is indeed preparation for the martial law state. It is also subject of a discussion in Business Wire, and that is the context for the article in the Washington Post by Walter Pincus, Spying Necessary, Democrat State. The two key Democrats yesterday who had been questioning the NSA domestic surveillance program agreed that spying is necessary on all those who may be suspect within the United States. And that is the significance of what is called the wartime power play. As Capitol Hill prepares to battle the White House over George W. Bush's expanding war powers, senators on both sides of the aisle are considering a range of options. And all of those options involve expanding the capacity of the military to exercise its rule within the United States itself.
Ralph, as William Arkin notes in his blog on the Washington Post, National and Homeland Security blog, and his column is called Early Warning, his column of January 26th, Goodbye War on Terrorism, Hello Long War, in it he notes that the public cannot accept that Iraq is really a part of a response to 9/11. This is, Arkin does not note that it's a false flag, 9/11, but even so, he says that the war on Iraq does not have any credibility with the people in the United States as an approach to, as a response to a so-called terrorist act. And he says support for permanent war is declining. As a consequence, Arkin states, the Pentagon has come up with, instead of a war on terror, since the population doesn't believe there is a real war on terror, that they've come up with this notion of a long war. And he asks, 20 years, 10, why not 10, or is it really 40 years? And he notes that the Bush administration is only comfortable with the military response, and it is only really happy with secret operations. Well, we have to note that it's not just the Bush administration, because, if you will recall, it was the administration of John F. Kennedy that fomented the idea of covert operations as being the significant way for international policy around the world. I want to bring in, before we close, and Ralph, I'll leave for you the closing, a comment from by Matt Kelly, an Associated Press writer, that appeared in the San Francisco Chronicle on Saturday, October 25th, 2003. This is more than 2 years ago. And it's with reference to Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld, who was touring Iraq, and he was speaking to a soldier in the Army. Quote, given the chance to talk to the Defense Secretary, one soldier from the 101st Airborne Division asked what was on the minds of many. When will the worldwide fight against terrorism be over? Quote, I mean, should I get my 3-year-old ready for air assault school? The soldier asked Secretary of Defense Donald H. Rumsfeld. I wish I could give you a date, but I can't, Rumsfeld said. Ralph?
John Brinkerhoff commented on PBS, the United States is now, for the first time since the War of 1812, a theater of war. That means we must apply the same command structure within the United States that we apply in other theaters of war. In response to Hurricane Katrina in September 2005, according to the Washington Post, White House senior advisor Karl Rove told the governor of Louisiana, Catherine Babineau Blanco, explore legal options to impose martial law or as close as we can get. The White House tried to compel Governor Blanco to to yield control of the state National Guard. And indeed, martial law was imposed in New Orleans after the contrivance of the Hurricane Katrina destruction of the levees, because those levees were set up to fail. In September, NORTHCOM conducted a highly classified granite shadow exercise in Washington. William Arkin reported in the Washington Post, "Granite Shadow is a top-secret, compartmented operation related to the military's extra-legal powers, allowing for emergency military operations in the United States without supervision or control." And that, brothers and sisters, is the meaning of Halliburton being assigned a multimillion-dollar program for defense detention facilities that enormously increase NORTHCOM's response to putative domestic disorder. The long war, the apotheosis of capitalism, is a permanent war, a class war on the people of the United States. I cannot but refer here to a rather instructive incident that was reported on February 12, 2006. Vice President Dick Cheney shot and wounded a companion during a weekend quail hunting trip in Texas, spraying his fellow hunter in the face and chest with shotgun pellets. Harry Whittington, a millionaire attorney from Boston, was in a Corpus Christi hospital Sunday after he was shot by Cheney on a ranch in South Texas, said Catherine Armstrong, the property's owner. Armstrong, 78, was injured in the cheek, neck, and chest during the incident that occurred on Saturday. Cheney's spokeswoman, Lee Anna McBride, said the vice president met with Whittington and his wife at the hospital on Sunday. The man who dodged responsibility for being in the military service, the man who, along with Rumsfeld and Bush, who are orchestrating the long war, who are preparing the martial law state, shoots his companion in the face in an incident reported. And levity aside, brothers and sisters, they are preparing to shoot us all in the face. They are preparing to subjugate the American people. They are preparing a class war that involves the destruction of our social services and all our gains. Cheney may shoot his fellow hunter, but that is a metaphor for the targeting of the American people. The apotheosis of capitalism is its addiction to permanent war, its preparation for nuclear strikes, its commitment to subjugate the people of the United States even while it pauperizes us in our many millions. It is a call to us, brothers and sisters, a call to us to mobilize in our own name, to build our own political instruments. Yes, to echo what Vladimir Lenin sought to do in 1903 when he wrote, "What is to be done? What is to be done, brothers and sisters? Are we to go quietly into the night of martial law? Or do we acquiesce in the two parties that are the one big party of capital as they engineer the state of oppression and exploitation? Or do we build our own political instruments for fundamental change and reclaim the socialist ideal as we mobilize for political power and, yes, mobilize for the revolutionary transformation of this dying republic?"
This has been Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen, our two-part series, The Long War.
Big, 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 big